You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
There we go. Well, good morning. Welcome to MC3. Not yet. My name is Sean. I'm the lead pastor here, and we are doing a series right now called Family Hacks. We're about halfway through the middle of it, and I want to just share a little childhood moment with you, if that's okay. That's not childhood. When I was a kid, we drank out of the hose, which, you know, that's what's wrong with me, right? So, got to start with the mat, of course. All right. Official, just for the record. See? Play-Doh, just in case you were wondering. And let's see. The Fun Factory. Remember the Fun Factory? Squeeze out the spaghetti. Say yes, because you do. Yes, you know you do. Actually, you're like, I just used to eat that. Nobody else did that. It's just you. You're the only person that ever ate Play-Doh. So I got a little masher here, and I don't know, a spoon, a turkey. All right, so I think I've got. Oh, get a little knife. You always need a knife here. Oh, and a roller. That's cool. Okay, so I think I've got enough to work with here. So, I don't know how many of you guys have ever played with Play-Doh. Raise your hand. Come on. Yeah. Okay. And we all did, maybe. Some of you did not. Maybe some of you made your own Play-Doh. But we're going to play with Play-Doh right now. So I've got a little bit of... I've got a lot of Play-Doh, actually. Anyway, it's a whole other story. But you guys would play it. You know, we would do things. You'd make it into a ball, or you'd take it and stick it in the Fun Factory, and let's see, what shape are we going to get? Oh, the spaghetti. That is totally the best shape. You know it is. All right. Little. Oh, it's breaking. Oh. Dried Play-Doh stuck in the Fun Factory. Nothing worse than that. What is this? There's like treasures in here. Anyway, all right, so let's see if I can get the spaghetti to work now. Maybe, maybe not. Now I broke the whole thing. All right, spaghetti in 3, 2, 1. All right, yeah, well, spaghetti, you know, that would be fun, but nobody likes the spaghetti anyway, so why would we want to play with that? But I don't know what it was like in your house growing up. I tend to be a rule follower, and I don't know, you probably, if you know me for any more than 10 minutes, you would call me like a legalist, or you would call me, there's probably other things you would call me, and I would appreciate it if you didn't do that. But it's probably deserved, because I tend to be a person that always does things the way they're supposed to be. And in our house, now I have two younger brothers, they are twins, and they're 4 years younger than me. And in our house, the rule was, you do not what? You don't mix the colors! Come on! And, and it made for like this monochrome kind of life for us, because even if you were making like spaghetti and meatballs, you know, where normally you do like a yellow spaghetti and then red, maybe brown for meatballs and red for sauce. Like, that was a no-no in our house. You made yellow spaghetti, then you better be making yellow meatballs and yellow spaghetti sauce. And then you pretend. And it doesn't matter, because when you eat it, it all tastes the same anyway. But anyway, so you don't mix the colors. And the thing about Play-Doh, and here's the deal with mixing the colors, right? You take a little bit of a yellow here. Yellow. What are you, yellow? I was watching Back to the Future 3. Anyway, take a little bit of yellow, a little bit of, what is this, green? I think that's green or blue. I mean, some sort of shade of blue. And right here, you know, you're good to go. You're fine. You have two separate colors. Life is good. You can put it back in the right can, and you're all good. But when you take the two colors and you combine them, and at first it's always like, look at that, it's like the icing on my little mini cupcake. But it never ends up being, well, then I'm going to carefully peel the icing off and put it back into the appropriate container. Because we were never like that. It was always, you put icing on, and then it got mashed up and mangled, and then somebody ended up having to make a snake. Because you have to make a snake when you play with Play-Doh. And all of a sudden, you know, people start playing with it, and then it's time to clean up because, you know, the street lights are coming on, so you have to come in from outside and walk the 6 miles from your neighbor's house because all of that was allowed. I'm just totally like, no. Anyway, but you would come home, you have to clean everything up quickly, and all of a sudden, when you cleaned up quickly, your yellow and blue were no longer yellow and blue. They have become this entirely new color. And there is no way, at least to my knowledge, that you can take these two colors and separate them again. Because these two colors have become one new color. There is nothing you can do to take them apart, and there is nothing unique about them individually anymore. They are now one. And if you haven't figured out, we're going to talk about marriage today, since it says on the screen, marriage. And the point that I want you to walk away with today, the one thing that I want you to get and understand, and this is the hack for the week, try this marriage hack. Become one with your spouse. And this is a biblical concept, this idea of becoming one. Two individual colors, two individual parts that come together as one. We're going to be looking at, I don't know how I'm going to do it this now, we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 2, and if you have the YouVersion app, you can tap Genesis chapter 2. If you have paper Bibles, the lights will be coming on, and you can look at that. But we're going to be in Genesis chapter 2, and it's on the screen here for you as well. And this is the story right near the beginning. God had just finished creating everything, and creating all of everything. I mean, everything, the universe. And he is now at this moment in Genesis 2 where he's talking, and of course we'll see what's going on. It says, the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. Now the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the wild animals and all the birds in the sky. He brought them to the man to see what he would name them. And whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. So the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds in the sky, and all the wild animals. But for Adam, no suitable helper was found. So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs, and then closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib that he had taken out of the man. He brought her to the man, and the man said, yeah, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman before she was taken out of man. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and the two, they become one flesh. See, that was God's idea, was taking two different colors, two unique people, man, woman, bringing them together in this thing called marriage, and they become one flesh. So let's look at this a little bit here. We're talking about marriage is making a new color. And again, we've been talking about all sorts of things. If you were here last week, we talked about singleness, and we talked about how God, you know, that's actually God's design. He likes that concept, and so you can be devoted fully to God. And of course, at the end of the point last week, we said sometimes you can't do that because it's a special gift. It's a unique thing, and it's something that God needs to kind of, that's his thing for you. And other times, it's okay to get married. So we're talking about marriage this week. I just want you to kind of cover my bases that we talked about singleness last week. We'll be talking about all sorts of other stuff over the course of this series. But today, looking at this idea of making a new color, of the two becoming one. And so here's what's going on in this passage, just to help you understand it. The first thing is that we, as humans, were designed for relationship. God made us need each other, need others. We need relationship. And just listen to me. This is not on the screen, just so you know back there. Listen to me as I read this. This is Genesis chapter 1, verse 3. Don't follow there because I'm going to be flying. Genesis 1, 3. Then God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. Genesis 1:10. God called the dry ground land and the waters seas, and God saw that it was good. Genesis 1:12, the land produced vegetation, all sorts of seed-bearing plants and trees with seed-bearing fruit. Their seeds produced plants and trees of the same kind, and God saw that it was good. You can kind of deal with that refrain there. Verse 17, God set these lights in the sky to light the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. All right, you getting it here? All right. So God created, this is verse 21. So God created sea creatures and every living thing that scurries and swarms in the water, and every sort of bird, each producing offspring of the same kind. And God saw that it was good. All right. Then Genesis 1:31. Then, sorry, you know, I skipped one here. Genesis 1:25. God made all sorts of wild animals, livestock and small animals, each able to produce offspring of the same kind. And God saw that it was. And then finally in verse 31, then God looked over all he had made and he saw that it was very good. So here you've got Genesis 1, the story of creation and everything God creates and goes, that's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. Then we hit Genesis chapter 2. And in verse 18, this idea of being created for relationship, and this is what we see, that the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. This is the first time in all of the story of creation, everything that God has created and made, that he says something is not good. And what is not good is the man is alone. He is alone because God created us. We are designed for relationships. So you've got Adam, who is this man, this alone man, alone as the only man alone of humanity. He is it. That's all there is. And so God says, this isn't good. This is not good that this guy is alone. So I'm going to make a helper suitable for him. Now, just a couple of things here that the interesting thing about this word alone. Now, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. That was the language people spoke, so that's what they wrote. And we, of course, translate it into English right now, unless you're wearing, like, your Doctor Who TARDIS translator that allows you to translate everything that you're nearby. But you're probably not, so this is just English for the rest of you. But the original Hebrew, the word for alone is an interesting word. It means to be an individual limb. It means to be amputated. The word is used for something that has been cut off, just a part. And so God says that this man, this Adam, he's amputated. He's missing a part. He is alone. He's separated. He's missing something that is needed. And so God says, I am going to make a helper suitable for him. And this suitable for him is actually another cool kind of word. It means it's two words together. It means to be like and to be different. To be the same and to be opposite of. And so he's looking and saying, okay, I need to make a helper that is like him, but will complete him. That will be the opposite of him. That will be someone that can be a relationship person for him. And so this idea that this guy, this Adam, he is alone. He is an amputated limb. He is by himself. He is a half. Not a whole. And so this is what God did. He says, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I need a helper. I need someone suitable for this guy, someone that is equal to him and kind of opposite to him. And so God said, I'm going to put all the animals that I have created. And we don't know how long this took, how this all worked. But he said, I'm going to bring all the animals before Adam, before this man, just to basically say, okay, let's find someone for you, Adam. Let's see what we can get here. What have we got? And so it says, the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the wild animals and all the birds in the sky. He brought them to the man to see what he would name them. There's actually an interesting phrase here. The idea of naming sort of means to have like an authority over them. It doesn't just mean they're like, rhinoceros. Like, it's not like that. It's not like he was also going, you know, some kingdom, phylum, genus, order, species. No, I missed one. King Philip couldn't order. Anyway, it wasn't anything like that either. It wasn't all science-y. That was a little bit later. There was a guy that did that, and I forget his name right now, but he was old and but good. He did stuff. But anyway, so it wasn't something like that. It was just an idea of saying, okay, where is there someone that's good enough to complete me? I am an empty half. I am an amputated limb. I am a single lone color needing something better, needing something more. And so God, again, created this man in this need for relationship. So he named them, and that was his name. But the man, and so the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds in the sky, and all the wild animals. But for Adam, no suitable, and that's that word again, no one that is equal and opposite helper was found. There was no one for Adam. The animals wouldn't cut it. The birds weren't good enough because they're not the same. They're different. They're not the same, but opposite. They're opposite and opposite. They're differently different. And so God said, okay, this isn't good. And so there was no helper found among all the animals that had already been created, all the birds, everything that was in the sky and in the, on the land. And so God said, this isn't good. Because this man is alone and it's not good. He is an amputated limb. He is by himself. And so, when it comes to this idea of a new color, God created sexes for companionship. And just to clarify, we're not talking about sex. We're not talking about intercourse. We're going to talk about that in a couple more weeks, so come back. But this is, I'm talking about male, female. The issue of being male and being female. And so this idea that it wasn't good that this man was alone, there was no helper suitable that for him from all the other things that God had created. So he needed to fix it. So he now creates sexes. He creates male and female, and we'll see that here, for companionship. And that's what we've got right there in verse 21, this idea that Adam is a half, an incomplete half. And so God did something. God had caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, Sandra Bullock came along and stole... No, that's... I'm old. Sorry. That's an old reference to an old movie. That was like 1994 or 3. So while he was sleeping, God took one of the man's ribs. The Hebrew word is side. So it may have been a literal rib. It may have been a side, a part of him. I'm dropping my... Kept it. All right. And then closed up the place with flesh. And then the Lord God made a woman from the rib that he had taken out of the man and brought her to the man. So no suitable helper was found. There wasn't someone for this man needing relationship, this half that was incomplete. And so God said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make an equal but opposite. He makes another human. And then makes this one female, who is equal but opposite. She is now the same species? Sure. Yeah, that sounds sciencey. But if she is now a female, she is the opposite of him. She is the antithesis of him. So they are the same but opposite. And he says to he makes this woman out of him, out of his side. And then it says, the man said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. He says, yes, God, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. This is the one that I have needed. And he says, for she will be called woman. Now, I just share something about the word woman. Obviously, in English, you see man and woman. They're the same. They're similar words, man, woman, because they're unified in the sense that she was taken out of him. But the Hebrew is actually very similar. The Hebrew word for man is ice. And the Hebrew woman for the Hebrew word for woman is Isa. So he's actually, there's a play on words that works in English and it actually works in Hebrew as well. And that's what he's saying. She's going to be called Isa because she was taken out of ice. She's going to be called woman because she was taken out of man. So here's a question for you. Why is this, right? Why do we say woman, singular, right? And then we say women for plural? Because the O doesn't change. I don't get that. Like, shouldn't it be woman and woman? What? No, nobody's tracking with me here. It's like woman, women. Women is many women. Woman is one. Okay, well, maybe you're all perfect grammaticians and all that, but it's just weird to me. So anyway, so this woman is created out of man. And he says, for she was taken out of man. And the word taken out is such a cool word. It means to be captured. To be taken from in a good way, like she has been captured. God has been able to capture what Adam needs in this companion by creating a woman. She was captured. She was taken out of the Adam, the ice, for the sake of the Isa. And so now God has created this equal but opposite. And so now you've got, you know, this man who is one half, and now you've got this woman who's the other half. So he could totally look at her and say, you complete me. Say, I totally botched that one. That's another old reference to an old movie. So I need to move on with some newer references here. So I'm sure there's something that, you know, happened in something recently. But this idea of being completed, you know, Jerry Maguire thought he had it, but it wasn't Jerry. It was God's idea. So you've got this man half and this woman half. And so now you've got this. Okay, now we're getting closer. Because before Adam was alone, Adam was a single half. He was a separate half. He was an amputated limb. And now God has created this woman, this other half, this person that is now, whoa, she completes me. For the bad reference to what all it represents, but she's the yin to his yang. That's a whole other thing. But that idea that there's really, they are opposite but complete together. And so God had made this woman out of the man. So you have God seeing that there's this issue that we were designed for relationship. Humans were designed for relationship. And then God created sexes. He created male and female for companionship. Now there are two halves that work together. You can't do it any other way. And so he says, this is the way it is created. We are designed for companionship. We have made male. We have made female. There is a human. It was an opposite to the other person. It says, this is it. Now we've got the two halves. So, but the two halves are not good enough, because they're still separate. So God said, how do we fix that? I mean, this is me interpreting there a little bit. And so what God did is he created something, because my PowerPoint is blank here. He created marriage. There we go. Marriage is the solution. I knew it was something important. Marriage is the solution for partnership. So you've got this male who is alone, half empty, missing, amputated. And then he says, okay, let's create out of you an equal but opposite. Now we've got a man and a woman. And so he says, how do we fix this problem with the two halves? We bring them together and the two become one. The two separate colors, the yellow, the blue, combine to become one. And that is what marriage is all about. That is why God designed marriage. That is why God created marriage. And we're going to talk again in a couple of weeks about how God created marriage, and sex is designed to be within that context. And there's some really incredible, great reasons for that. But right now, we're just going to say that God created marriage because he said that we need to complete this. We need this man to not be alone. He needs a partner, a partnership. And this needs to be something more. And it's not just a 50-50. This is a 100-100. This is all in. And I don't know if you've ever, you know, had some sort of a partnership with someone. I'm sure maybe on paper there might have been 50% of the income or something like that. And maybe 51, 49, something like that. But if you're in a partnership with somebody, I mean, you're all in. Even though on paper it might be half and half, but you don't say, oh, sorry, that's the end of my half. No, if you're in a partnership, it's all in. It's 100%. And that is what God said. I want to create this man who is single. I want to create something for him, someone for him. So he created this woman. It's like, good. We have two equal but opposite halves. Now let's bring them together in this partnership called marriage. And so that is what God does here in Genesis 2:24. He says, that is why, all of this reason, this woman being created out of the man, this is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, is united, becomes one with, partnerships with, and they become one flesh. And the word flesh is basar. It means meat. It means something that you can't pull apart. It essentially means one new color of Play-Doh. That's a loose translation, but I'm sure it's somewhere deep in the Hebrew there somewhere that it means basar, which also means one new color of Play-Doh. But they become one flesh, and that is what God said. I've got these two halves. How do we resolve this incompleteness? It's called marriage. We bring them together. The two become one. And these two are not just individual ones. They become one new thing, one new flesh. It wasn't just like parts. Get that? I want you to understand. That's the issue with one flesh. He's not saying, you know, you become two kind of intermingled parts connected. No, you become something altogether new. You become one new flesh. So that is what God designed it. And so marriage is this thing where God says, okay, we need relationships with other people. We need to be in connection. And so he creates this woman, this companion for him, this person that can complete him, this friendship. And then says, let's bring this together in marriage. And that is what God did when he was creating this new color. And that's the whole point. That's the whole reason that we do this marriage thing. It's because it's a whole new way to become what God intended and how he intended you to be together. And understand that this is designed for bringing two into one flesh. That's also why Paul, as we talked about last week, said that singleness is a gift. Singleness is a special thing that we need to honor and celebrate, because those that have chosen to be single, they have chosen to do something saying, I am not going to become one flesh with a spouse. I'm essentially going to become one flesh with God. I'm going to commit my time and my energy to God. And if you weren't here last week, you can go to mc3church.org and click on listen to the point, and you can listen to it. We talked about this idea of having, you had one job. And that's what singleness was designed as. And so with marriage, now your interests are divided. But God said, this is good because you become one flesh, one new whole. And in a healthy marriage, in a good marriage, you should feel that way. You should feel incomplete without your spouse. And there's nothing wrong with you if you feel that way. There's nothing about you that's like, oh, you're not a strong single man or a strong single woman. I mean, not single because you're married. But that's because God designed us to be connected, to be intermingled, to become this new color. And once you get the new color, you can't pull it apart. And the other side of this, too, is that you may have the marriage license on paper, but if you haven't really become one flesh with your spouse, then you're missing what God intended by marriage. And the other thing I want you to understand, too, is that one flesh is not sex. It's not just that. This isn't like a physical, the two become one. You create babies. No. This is way more than that. It's that everything about life is one with your spouse. Everything about who you are is connected together. It's not yellow and blue. It's green. It's one flesh. So that's what God designed marriage for. That is the whole point of this new color. We're designed for relationship. God created sexes for companionship, and marriage is the solution for partnership. That's the way God kind of put this whole package together, and that's what it's all about. And I hope we can kind of understand that this is a good thing. This is a great thing. So with that in mind, here's the point again, is that the marriage hack, try this. Become one with your spouse. Practice not just being blue, not just being yellow, but together becoming green. Together becoming one. And again, we'll talk about this more in a couple of weeks and why sex is such an interesting challenge here, because God designed this becoming one. And if there's another relationship outside, adultery or anything like that, that it kind of messes that up, because now you've got family and kids and all these other things that aren't exactly what God intended. And so these pieces get pulled apart a little bit, and we're like, what's going on? And so again, we'll get to that. And God is so cool, so amazing, so full of grace and powerful stories of changing and fixing and healing. But we'll get to that in a couple of weeks. But understand that this is one of the reasons why God made marriage, is to bring us together as one. So, some things for you. If you are currently married, or if you will be married in the very near future, which I know of some people that will be married in the very near future, some things for you to know. And if you're not married, of course, the kids in Ignition are actually learning the same point this week. They learn the same things that you do, so you can have conversations as a family together. And they're learning that marriage is a good thing. And so it's not too early to learn about this. So here's some things that it's going to require if you want to become one with your spouse. It is not a marriage license. Now, that is a start, but that's not becoming one just because you sign the paper. It's going to require a few things. The first thing it's going to require is abandonment. Abandonment, which is a strong word. To abandon someone, I mean, that's punishable by law. If you abandon someone, if you abandon your children, if you abandon someone on the side of the road, you know, nothing good is going to happen in that if it's a movie and it's nighttime. You know, eventually someone will run into the woods, when they should be running to, like, the police station across the street, but nobody ever runs to the police station. You run into the woods, and depending on the level of how attractive the female might be will determine how quickly she dies. That just seems to be the way it works in horror movies. And then she will trip on a log, and then the bad guy will get him because someone abandoned her on the side of the road. So abandonment is a bad concept. But here's the thing. Bringing it back together. Here's the thing about it. In Genesis 2:24, which we already looked at this verse at the end, this is what God says. He says, this is why a man leaves his father and mother. And the, man, I'm going to die here. The word leave means to abandon, to forsake, to desert, to leave behind. And so God says, look, this whole becoming one thing, it's going to require you to give up and leave behind your family, the mother, the father that raised you, that nurtured you, that provided for you, that stayed up late at night when you were crying, that fed you, all of those things. And your job is to leave them behind. And that's a good thing. Your job is to abandon them because God says, look, this thing, you're not attached anymore to those things. In order to become a new color, you're going to have to leave the can. Play-Doh can, that is. No other metaphors there. Because you can't stay in your color and become a new color. You can't. And God has designed marriage to be that way. And so just as parents, I've got four children. They're getting older and older. They have years, decades, until they're ready to be married. But I need to be preparing now to say, okay, my job is to get you out of the house. We've talked about that before. A parent's job is to pack their kids' bags. And from the moment of birth, to get them ready to leave, to become what God has for them. And so marriage requires you to become one flesh. You're going to have to abandon that. Parents, we're going to have to deal with that. And we have to be willing to say, no, you can't come back to me. Go to your husband. Go talk to your wife. Work this out. You know, it just can't be that way. It also means you're going to have to abandon some friendships. Because, you know, it's all depending on your age and where you are in life. But like in college, I had a bunch of guy friends that we hung around with all the time. We did really bad things for Bible college. But it was bad for us. We, like, one time, we went to Goodwill and got stuff for free. Bunch of guys in college together. Yeah, so anyway, that was rebellious for college students, for Bible college students. But anyway, but I had friends, and when I got married, you know, many of them, frankly, the people in our wedding, I don't even really talk to anymore. And I believe, you know, aside from the fact that your sister is one of the people in your wedding party, you know, we've lost touch. Not because we don't care about them, not because we're not nice people, but because we have said, okay, we are abandoning these things for the sake of this new thing. And that's okay. And so if you have friends that are married or recently married or getting married or been married for years and they maybe were in this room right now and are going like, you know what, I really need to focus on becoming one with my spouse, and they say, you know what, that means I'm going to leave you behind. You need to say that's a good thing. Because it is more important for you to have deep, close relationship, friendship, best friendedness with your spouse than it is to have with someone else. And it scares me, honestly, when people are like, oh, I love my husband, but she's my best friend. It can't be that way. God designed this to become one. God designed us to become one new color. And you can't keep some of the other color and become one at the same time. So it means abandon. It means giving up the things that you may have had, the friends, the way you have done things, all of that. The toilet paper going over, the toilet paper going under. Some of those things are serious, godly, spiritual decisions. And maybe you're going to need to pray about it and decide that having it go over is the right way. So, but you might have to give up some things to do that. And that's this idea. When you become one, you need to abandon all those things. Your hobbies, you might have been the best Play-Doh maker ever. And you may give up your dreams of being a full-time professional Play-Doh-er because you're getting married. I know a woman that had potential to be on stage. She was actually offered a position at Sight and Sound. And she could have then gone further into, you know, theater, Broadway, or whatever. And she decided to marry this guy who said, I'm going to be a youth pastor. And then he said, hey, let's plant a church. It'll be great. And she gave that up. Because she married me. And
That's part of it. Not because she married me, like, ooh, I'm worth it. But that's what this abandonment means. That we're going to give up these things so that we can become one flesh. The second thing it's going to require, and this is kind of similar, is it's going to require sacrifice. It's going to require you to sacrifice. Sacrifice means up giving. Means giving up. There we go. Sacrifice means giving up a couple of words. The first word you need to give up is me. The second word you need to give up is I. Maybe the third word is mine. Because when you get married, you give those things up for the sake of your spouse. It's sacrifice. And if it's sometimes hard, if it means there's things you really like to do, but because you love your spouse, because you love your husband, because you love your wife, you are giving them up, that's okay. Because you're more interested in becoming one flesh, becoming a new color, which is what God designed. God did not design us to become a whole bunch of different colors, kind of a little bit mingled somewhat together. Two, become one flesh. Two colors becoming one. And so you're going to have to sacrifice. Here's a passage in Ephesians. And I will tell you, if you have not been to church, this might be the first time you've ever heard this. If you've grown up in church, there have been a lot of churches that have taken this and used it in a really bad way. But I want you to just bear with me here as we read this passage in Ephesians. This is Paul. He wrote a letter to a church that he planted in a town called Ephesus. And he was writing this letter back to them after a few years and saying, here's some things I want to catch you up on. And he says, to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. First of all, he says, submit to one another, meaning we submit to each other in our relationships. Because there are things that I will do and say, you know what? Well, for example, I am the lead pastor of MC3, but I also am under the authority of the elders here. And if they say, Sean, we want you to do this, I'm going to submit because that is my responsibility and in trusting God's leadership, God leading them. And so that's an okay thing to submit. And so we're doing it together. Everyone submits because Jesus is bigger than all of us. Jesus is the bigger picture. Jesus is the better story. And so then Paul goes on and says, wives, submit to submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Now, this is the verse that has been taken to mean like women are slaves to men. Man, you are in charge. Women, you do whatever. And that means you do the dishes and you better have dinner ready. And like, no, it's not this idea at all. And there's nothing wrong with doing the dishes. There's nothing wrong with cooking dinner. There's nothing wrong with any of that. But it's an issue of submission, not slavery. And so he says, submit to yourself. Well, why? Because we're submitting as you do to the Lord, as you submit to God, as you submit to Jesus. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, which he is the Savior. And now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. This means a couple of things. It means that the woman is going to be giving up. The wife is going to be giving up some of her things for the sake of submitting to her husband. Now here's the deal. It says, as the church submits to Christ. And I want to ask you this question. You don't have to answer it out loud. But of all the people, of all the individuals, of all the created things, who has our best interests at heart? And the answer to that is Jesus. And so if we are submitting to Jesus, Jesus knows what's best for us. He knows the best way. He is always looking out for us, always caring about us, doing everything to continue to show his love for us that we don't deserve and we turn our back and all of that. And God still says, I'm sending Jesus because I love you, because I care about you. And Jesus is going to do what is best for you. And so we want to submit to that because Jesus has our best interest in mind, because Jesus cares about us. And so husbands, if you are loving your wives, as we'll get to in a second, the way you should be, a wife should be like, I trust that Jesus is working through you, so I want to do that. It is a mutual thing. It is a submission to one another because of the way we submit to Jesus. And we can stand back and be like, no, I'm doing my own thing. But if a husband is truly loving his wife the way Jesus loves the church, that's something worth submitting to. And this is what he goes on to say. So we always talk about this passage, but men kind of, we like skip this next part. In churches, at least some churches have done this. But the issue here is that husbands, love your wives. And the word love, agape, unconditional. We've talked about that word a lot lately. Unconditional, without question. No, it doesn't matter what she does, what she doesn't do, when dinner's ready, when she doesn't cook. Maybe she doesn't even cook dinner. Maybe you do dinner. Unconditionally loving them as just as Christ loved the church
The church is us, followers of Jesus, humanity, people that have chosen to follow him. And what did Jesus do? He gave himself up. Jesus said, I love you so much that I'm going to die in your place. I am going to take your sin in my body, the worst form of punishment that has been devised by man, because he loved us, the church. And what did he do? He gave himself up for her to make her holy. He wanted to do everything to make her pure, to cleanse her by washing with water. These are metaphors through the word, to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. Jesus' whole point was to say, I want to make you perfect. I want to make you clean. I want to make you look as good as you possibly can. And I'm willing to die in your place to make that happen. That is what Jesus tells us to do as husbands for our wives. And so, men, if you are loving your wives that way, if you are willing to sacrifice all that you have, everything you're willing, I mean, he gave his life. You can't give more than that. He did that for the sake of us. Husbands are supposed to do the same for their wife. To make those sacrifices, to give up those things for her. And the whole point is to make her look good. Your job is to make her look good. To sacrifice for her, to do whatever you can to present her as beautiful. That also means you're not talking bad about her behind her back or to your friends. Ladies, the same thing. Like, that doesn't work. If you have a problem with your husband, you talk to your husband and you shut your mouth the rest of the time. If you have a problem with your wife, you talk to your wife. Work these things out. Because your job is to make them look good. And so this whole relationship requires sacrifice. Men are giving up things for the sake of their wives. Wives are giving up things for the sake of their husband. Because you are no longer individuals. You are becoming one flesh. You're a new color. That is the way God designed it. And if we try to do it on our own, it doesn't work. And we fail. We do. We all do. I'm just trying to make my way through this thing too. I'm coming up on 17 years of marriage in July. What month are we in? Are we in May? Are we still in May? I think we're still in May. And I'm still learning. There's a whole lot of learning. I mean, the learning curve was a whole lot higher at the beginning, I hope. It seemed a little rough there, but that's normal. But you have to learn to sacrifice. That's the whole point. That in order to become one flesh, it can't be your thing. It can't be your stuff, your way, your plans. It's got to be our plans, our ways. We are working together to grow in Jesus, to grow closer to him, to look like Jesus in all that we do and the way we act. And that comes back to what we talked about the first week of this series about Jesus being that keystone, the most important part of your family. And that is the job of husbands and wives, to sacrifice together for the sake of their spouse. So becoming one requires abandonment. You're going to have to give up some things. It requires sacrifice. You're going to have to sacrifice some things personally. It's not about me and I. It's about us. We're not talking yellow. We're not talking blue. We're talking green. And the third thing is that becoming one requires commitment. Marriage. And again, I know some of you guys, we have some weddings coming up in the next few weeks here. Marriage is hard. It is hard. It's not only hard. There's amazing parts. There's beautiful parts. There's wonderful things together. But it takes work to make that happen. And if you think that your job is done when you're married, when you've got the rings, you are wrong. If you've been married for 20, 50, 70, 100 years, whatever, and you think that once you got the ring, you're done, you're wrong. It's work. The work begins when you get the ring. Because our job is to be committed to one another, to work hard towards this becoming one. Because on our own, that's what sin does. It pulls us away. It pulls us away from each other. It pulls us away from Jesus. It pulls us away from anything that matters because we want to do what we want. It's all about me, myself, and I. And so becoming one is going to require commitment. And this is what Paul writes another letter to a church in Corinth that he planted and was telling them about some other things going on there. He wrote a lot of letters. That's what a lot of the New Testament was. And in this one letter in 1 Corinthians, he wrote two letters. The first letter he wrote to the church in Corinth, he said, love is patient. Love, unconditional love, love, agape love. And I know that's the word that was translated when they wrote this was agape, which means unconditional, which means doesn't matter what you do, I am still going to love you. When we, no matter what we do, Jesus still agapes us. And so Paul says that, you know, it's not about like, oh, we feel like we're in love. Or this like, every time I stare into your eyes, my heart just melts. You know, that's great, but that's not love. Love is a commitment. Love is an unconditional thing. It is an agape. That's love. And so he goes on and says, love is patient. You're going to take work. It's going to take time. It's not going to all be perfect every moment at every time. It's going to take some time. It's kind. You're going to be nice. You're going to be kind to each other. It's not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. And I don't have time to break down every one of these words. It does not demand its own way. So we talk about sacrifice. It is not irritable. It keeps no record of being wrong. Next 2 weeks from now, we're going to talk about conflict, how to deal with conflict. And conflict is okay. Just don't sweat it. It's okay to have conflict. When you care about an issue and when you care about a person, there's going to be conflict at times. If you don't care about the issue, you just give in. If you don't care about the person, you just steamroll them. But if there's true love about an issue and a person, there's going to be conflict. The issue isn't that conflict is bad. It's how you deal with it. And we'll talk about that in 2 weeks here in the point. And so he says it doesn't keep record of being wrong. And that's one of the things that conflict, that's not fighting fair. You keep records of wrongs. Oh, remember that time? No. If you've dealt with it, it's done. It does not rejoice about injustice. Doesn't celebrate the bad things, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. And then he concludes this little statement on agape love by saying, love never gives up. It takes work. It takes work. It takes work. It takes hard work. And then when you're done with the hard work, then hard work again. And I'll just be straight. You know, the more work you take to work on your relationship, the better the fun moments are. The better those moments of celebration. And by the way, work can be fun. It doesn't always have to be a bad thing, but it takes work. It takes effort. And if you want a marriage that is successful, that truly becomes one flesh, one together, a new color, it's going to require work. It's going to require something that says, I'm not giving up. I won't give up on us. Never loses faith. God can always work this out. It's always hopeful. There is a way. This is okay. And it endures through every circumstance. Those things are what are required of love. And in your relationship with your husband, your relationship with your wife, it's going to require commitment. It's going to take work. It's going to take patience. It's going to take endurance. It's going to take putting up with things that you might not otherwise want to put up with. Normally, it's easy to bail. But God is not designed. He says, you're becoming one flesh now. You need to work on it as best as you possibly can. And I just had a conversation with someone the other day, and I said, I wish you could like put that on a bumper sticker and hand it out to people. But, you know, you can't deal with anybody else. The only thing you can deal with is yourself. And so you need to be the best lover, unconditional lover, that you can be in your marriage. And when you're a good lover, it'll also help with the other lover part. We'll get to that in a couple of weeks. But that's what this idea of becoming one means. And then abandonment, sacrifice, and commitment. It's going to take work. It's going to take some hard work to get to that point. But when that happens, the two become one flesh. You are no longer individual colors, but you're one in the way that God designed it. So try this marriage hack, please, would be this. Become one with your spouse.